Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, my baby. It's so good to hear from you.
Been running, is my mind playing tricks on me? Is she one up for me? If I had to testify, I can only say she's the truth. It's like prayers went up and sent me you. Now I was in love. on my own. Could come and go as I please, nobody questioning me. I don't know when things begin to change. You came and turned it all around. Got me saying amen. From the bed to the stove, from the church to the job, best thing I got. Got me saying amen. Girl, you're looking good. You keep that cooking good. Best thing for sure. Your love's not settling, settling on me. Like a kid in a blanket, made it hard for me to leave. And you gave me new love, kind of never ever seen. And I'm eternally thankful. Got me saying amen. From the bed to the stove, from the church to the job, best thing I got. Got me saying amen. Girl, you're looking good. You keep that cooking good. Best thing for sure. Got me saying amen. From the bed to the stove, from the church to the job, best thing I got. Got me saying amen. Girl, you're looking good. You keep that cooking good. Best thing for sure.
It's hard for me to picture. I feel like it with you. Look what I've been missing. You turned it all around. Look what I've done now. Back in my old days.
And if I knew then what I know right now, I would have settled down a long time.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And if I hadn't met you.
Marvelous Monday, that's what we talk. I am Dr. Lorenzo D. Smith, the host of Talking Real to You. Real excited to get an opportunity to come before you again. Our call-in number for the show is 347-857-4192. We want you to be a part of it. We got some awesome topics to talk about tonight. We're going to keep it where we can let you get your voice heard, because that's what it's all about. This is best to allow you to speak on our topic. It's titled America Broken. Can we fix it? And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And we want you to keep it in line. We want some solutions tonight, how we can fix it. And that's what we're going to share with you, with the co-hosts as they begin to join me on Blog Talk Radio. Again, the call-in number is 347-857-4192. Now, if you want to share your point of view, press 1. I'll make sure I identify you with the last 4 digits of yourself or telephone number. Then I'll distinctly ask you to let us know your location. Then if you're comfortable with giving your name, first, last name, however, then offer your expertise. If you want to just hear this show, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/The Smith Way Production. Then if you want to check us out on Facebook, see, I have 2 devices of Facebook tonight, and I know one of the co-hosts is trying to get in on a device. She made a request with the one on my phone, and I don't really want to use that one. I want to use the iPad, and that is facebook.com/DRLDalberto Smith, so you can be a part of that. Now, if you want to tweet the show, you have an opportunity to do that. All you have to go to is Talking Real to You. At Lorenzo D. Smith 15, at coach_L_Smith. And we look forward to having an awesome time tonight. And I'm hoping that one of our co-hosts, Lisa, can get in. I see she's watching on one of the devices. She's also watching on the second device, which is a cell phone. And I want her to switch over to the iPad because I know she's watching. I made a request. She got to find that button and say, more or less an invite. I invited her, and she accepted on the phone, but I didn't want him to use the phone. I wanted to use the iPad again tonight. So I hope she can just make a point of just getting off that Facebook and reboot back up on Facebook, and that way it'll take you to the one you really need to be. Also, we have joining us so far tonight, and I thank her. So this young lady is awesome. She has a lot of energy. She's a lady of wisdom who taken all of that she had encountered in the many years serving our people in the form as an educator, the form as a leader, form as a counselor, as a member of a sorority, which is Zeta Phi Beta Sorority Incorporated, out of the state of South Carolina, none other than our favorite person, Sarah Scarlett H. Black. How you doing, Sarah?
I'm doing fine tonight. How are you? And I got the time right at last.
Awesome, awesome.
Having technical difficulties too, but we're on.
And I'm glad she was able to join us on what I would call Mother's Monday, because that's what it is. We're glad to have an opportunity to make it through what we call our weekend and be able to start, in some cases, the work week off on Monday and without any trials and tribulation. If we had them, we was blessed to be here today. So I'm giving them the praise because he blessed us to have an opportunity to be before you here tonight at 7:30. Lisa, I see she's texting me as well. She's trying to make sure she get in. Somehow, you know, it's not given an opportunity. I don't want to put her on the phone. You know, we're still doing this technology here, Scarlett. We're still trying to do this technology. And I don't want to put her on the phone.
Y'all keep right on.
This phone is, you can't hardly hear the phone, but the iPad comes in 100%. I see she's watching. So I sent an invitation to you, Lisa. You find that invitation in there and click on it, because you might have clicked on it for the cell phone instead of the iPad, and we need you to do that. And I don't want to shut the cell phone because we have quite a few joining us, and I want to give them a shout-out early because they with us, and whenever they come early, we have to give them a shout-out and make sure that we can look, we got Lisa joining us. We appreciate them joining us. We have Terrence Babyhead Gibson. Terrence is out of South Florida, Miami Gardens, a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated, also a officer in the Southern Region of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity, and he's the director of Big and Better Business. Thank you, Brother Terrence. And he's also, when I was in South Florida, a member of the Rho Sigma chapter. He's the president at the time. We'll give him that right shout out as being the congratulations. His term is over with, but he's still grinding for the Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. Dana Beiser, she's a member of Zeta Phi Beta Sorority out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She's joining us as well. She has the Zuma Mamacita. I purchased a shirt. The shirt is on its way, and I saw the mask. I'm going to get a mask. Like, I started the show off tonight with my mask on, talking about let's mask up. You know, let's hashtag
like
responsible.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
nice.
Responsible. That's what it's all about. We have another one of my fraternity brothers from Gamma Beta chapter at Alabama State University, Reverend, a minister, pastor, I would want to call the minister, Bobby Diggs. Thank you, Bobby. He's out of North Alabama. Thank you so much, Bobby, joining us. Also, we have Kay with Smile Turpin. Thank you, Kay, so much for joining us. And so far, the last person that's on the list, we have Denise Stephanie out of Berkeley, California, the author, founder of the Behind the Mask Ministry. She's joined us. She also had a birthday last week, and she had a chance to come on the show as well. We thank you, Denise, for joining us on Facebook as well. We got an awesome format, and I see Lisa still trying to get in. I see some other people trying to also join us as well. We got Barry Dobbs. He's joining us as well. Thank you so much. And I'm hoping, Lisa, I can get you in. I don't want to bring you in on the phone, because if I bring you on the phone, I'm not going to be able to hear you. We're not going to be able to hear you. So we got to keep on trying with that iPad. You have to get off. She says she's on her iPad, but what I need to make sure you do is to make sure you go to the – it's an invite coming from my iPad. I didn't want to shut down the phone because I got Facebook as well. Thank you so much for trying, Lisa, but we will make sure we give you the right introduction when we get you on the line, because we want you to say hello to everybody. We have several other team members that are not on the line right now, and I'll make a point not to go through it until they come on the line introducing them. And we're going to spend some time, all three of us, as soon as Scarlett, you're here, and as soon as Lisa says she's trying hard to get on that iPad.
I'm not fooling with this right now, you know. I'm going to be on there one day, but I don't have an iPad.
Hey, you're giving Scarlett that reason not to get on here to use that technology.
Yes, it's happened 2 weeks in a row.
Some way. all I could do is send an invite, and I think what happened was you accepted, but you accepted on the phone instead of the iPad.
You're watching
on the iPad, on my iPad, but I need for you to look and find the invite area so you can accept the invite, then I can approve it, then I can get you on here and have your video picture of you on here with us. We're going to try to get started, and hopefully Lisa can work it out, and then I'll give her that great introduction. Father, our title is America's Broken. Can we fix it? And we want to look at some topics relating to that. We want to discuss how COVID-19 has shown many weakness in all forms, in leadership, in government, in economics, in just people in general. We want to talk about that. America's being broken. How can we fix it? And we're just going to offer some thoughts on that and see exactly which way we want to go. And Scarlett, I'll let you get started off with it and just kind of share your thoughts in regards to that.
Well, first of all, before I go into responding to the question, may I say, give our deepest respect and our condolences to Brother John Robert Lewis's family, and just to honor and respect the life that he and the legacy that he's left us as a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated and a member of the Greek Letter Committee, because I always like to give a shout out to all the Greeks who join us week after week. But we'd be remiss if we did not honor and say something about his legacy and what he has meant to us, and the fact that even a few weeks ago he had joined the Black Lives Matter movement there in D.C. with the mayor of Washington, D.C. there, and still talking about the Band-Aid that's been pulled off the wounds by COVID-19. And it has exposed a lot of things that those of us in our communities and our culture already knew. We lived this 365 every single day, you know, all year, all of our lives, however old you are, we have lived all this. And now I think COVID-19 has exposed a lot of things that maybe people didn't believe, you know, believe us, or didn't believe that these things happened to black, brown, and poor people in this country, the greatest country in the world, the free world, the country filled with a lot of money and anything that we can resolve with the scientists and things of that nature. We have it here in this country, but somehow it does not reach all of us. And these are things that Brother Lewis talked about, the things that we certainly have talked about on the show for, you know, since I've been a part of it. And I know, Doc, you were doing this long before. But these are things that even as members of Greek Letter Communities, we collectively do within our communities to try to solve some of these problems. But are we now, we are in a crisis. We are broken, but we've been broken, but we just didn't know how broken we were. You know, many didn't know the scope of the brokenness, and COVID-19 has now exposed that, the extent to which America is broken. And unfortunately, our allies and our enemies around the world have now seen this exposure and taken advantage of it. And it's been allowed to be taken advantage of it. Our democracy is hanging on a cliff. We're on a cliff. I don't know if you remember, Doc, growing up, the movies where you had the cliffhangers. Well, this is a cliffhanger. And if we continue on this path for another 4 years or however many more years, America as a democracy that we know will not survive it, because right now we're at a cliffhanger, and if we don't watch it, we're going all of our fingers are going to slip off the cliff, and we're going to fall. And I just don't think that those of us, regardless of how many, you know, the problems that we do have, we're going to have to solve them. As Brother Lewis always said, we got to come together, we got to solve this together. We got to get rid of America's sin. 401 years, this is America's sin, and COVID has exposed it. So, yes, we're in a crisis. We're fighting for the soul of this country, the soul of our democracy, and we have a lot of things we got to do. But as we see on this show every week, there's not going to be anyone coming on a white horse with a spear and a coat of armor on trying to save you. We have got to come together, and we got to do it block by block, person by person, individual by individual, whatever we got to do. We've got to solve these problems starting with us, each one of us. We've got to start.
Exactly. And that's one of the things we ought to be focused on, because both Scarlett and I came most likely in a time was a little different to what young people are experiencing right now, which we was in a time when, as a brother, my frat brother, so proud, I did not omit him. I had a phase I was going to play something in one of his speeches.
Right.
To make sure I give him the right recognition.
You always
do. It's been quite a celebration. And quite a celebration started here in Alabama and Troy, Alabama, and worked its way to Selma, from Selma to Montgomery, and from Montgomery to Washington, D.C. today. He's one of our revered members of Phi Beta Sigma fraternity who has made a difference. He's caused what we call good trouble. Too many times we don't want to be in trouble, but it is a good trouble. And what we have to do is carry on the legacy. And as we say on this show, and I want to make sure we do focus completely on that block by block, focus on what's the solution, because I put that on Facebook today, on Instagram, America's Broken a Brain Teaser, I call, can we fix it? Yes, no, not sure. And I'm hoping everybody get an opportunity to go to Facebook and write down in the comment area what you think. However, if we begin to focus on what we need to do, what are the solutions? Yes, it's been 400 years of oppression, 400 years of being left out for black, brown, and many other colors of individuals. But what is our solution? And I said it one night on the show, and I'm going to keep saying it because I heard the professor from out there, UC Berkeley, said, we've been marching for pain. We've been marching for pain for the last 3 4 weeks. We need to march for change now. And we need to challenge our leaders in the Congress, challenge to put legislature together to make sure it protects African-American individuals. We don't want you to give us anything. But we do want to have the same rights or the same protections as any other individuals that a citizen of the United States. In some cases, people who are not even citizens of the United States. What we ask is it has to be some type of legislation to make change. Legislation that is going to be there and can't be removed. Yes, we have they're talking about today changing the name of the Civil Rights Act. Well, we understand the city. We have a Voters' Rights Act that, as we know, helped African Americans ensure that we was able to vote without being counted as a half or counted as property. However, we have to stop the census, allowing the census of the killing of African American black males and females. And we have to put in place legislation or enforce the laws we have to make sure we handle this. yes, it can be fixed, but we got to be able to focus on it. And we have to have everybody to come to the table with the same thought process. And the thing about it, if we keep rattling the chains down here on the ground, block by block, I think it will rattle the chain of those senators and those congressmen, because change can come there, and we have to make the change. Our governors and our mayors, it'll rattle the change that COVID has made everything equal. But without further ado, I want to make sure I give a shout out and an introduction to our other co-host who's joining us at this time. She was trying to get on, doing it hard. I know she was trying hard because we made it work pretty good the other day. Hails from the state of Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. And she transported herself down to South Florida, been down there for quite a few years, Boca Raton. She's a licensed clinical social worker and a professional yoga instructor of kids as well as adults. None other than our co-host, Lisa Levine. How you doing, Lisa?
I'm good. How are you?
Hello.
I'm okay.
Hello. Can you hear?
Yes,
yeah,
I can.
We're saying hello.
Yes, we can hear you very well. And that's why I didn't want to hit you on the phone, so I couldn't hear you. So that's why I said an iPad, and we're going to work on that. I don't know what was going on. We're going to continue to work on. But, Lisa, we was talking about America is broken. How do we fix it? And Scarlett shared her thoughts on it. I shared mine. What's your thoughts in regards to fixing America?
How much time do we have? well, we are very disconnected right now. And I think the most important thing we have to, and I've said this before, we have to work together. And what I'm seeing is a lot of emotions flying, a lot of anxiety, depression, and I think anger, anxiety, and depression all go hand in hand, right, guys? And people are reacting on their emotions. And rather than sitting, and there's something we say in mindfulness, sitting and taking a pause, take a break, try to find solutions. It just seems like we're arguing with one another. We're fighting. And I don't agree with some of the things that are going on. Just personally, I'm not into violence. I'm all about peace and just working together. And my hope is that we present ideas to people on how to make change or present change, and then they can present it in the places where they live. But something else I say is we're all given a space. You know, I was given a space in this world, and I'm here to put what I can out there to help make changes and impact people's lives. And I don't see that being the direction we're going in. I just see a lot of disconnection. And how do we fix something when we're disconnected? How do we fix something when we're not united or being team players? And we're not all going to agree on everything, and we all have different thoughts and opinions, and I always respect everybody's opinions because that's their opinion, that's their feeling, and they own it. And I think what's going on is just a lot of disrespect and people not showing empathy. And it always sends me back to how do we make people change, which we can't. We just have to keep educating and working on correcting the things that are wrong, and it's not going to happen overnight. Kind of like the vaccine. They showed that they made a vaccine. Well, wow, usually it takes years, you know. So then I'm wondering, does it really take years to make a vaccine? Or, you know, but we just have to be more kind and empathetic and compassionate towards one another, stop judging each other, and just try to work together, because I just see a lot of disconnection and anger and people directing their anger, I think, in the wrong places. Does that make sense? And I don't see how you can get anywhere. You know,
I think
that things can be things can be resolved, but we have to just work at it and keep trying and make changes, and we have to go from there. But change doesn't happen overnight, and I think, you know, and I, like I said, I don't like a lot of this violence, and I, maybe it has to happen, I don't know, but we're in the middle of a pandemic. So when I'm seeing that and I'm hearing we're not supposed to be in crowds, it's very confusing to me. And I know it's confusing to, like, my clients, my friends, to other people I talk to. They're very confused, you know. So it's a lot of mixed messages right now. We're not on the same page.
I think we need to get somewhat. Yeah, I agree. And I think that let's historically also put in this perspective, or look at it from this perspective. As long the tribalism and the disconnect, really, unfortunately, when we elected the first black president of the United States of America, there was some hidden anger underneath the Band-Aid. And unfortunately, with this situation that we have now, the Band-Aid has been, again, pulled off, and the wound has festered. It's been allowed to seep and not really heal. And when you start getting to tribalism and divisiveness or division politics, this is what we have, because the idea now is to conquer and divide. And right now we are polarized, and it's ugly. And hopefully, you know, I pray each day that doesn't get any uglier, but I'm not sure that it's not. Everyone's in their own corner.
Yeah, but I know, but my question too is, you know, my mom was relaying a story, because I, you know, I don't watch the news. You know, there's no need for someone to punch a hole in a wall because they're being asked to put a mask on. You know, it's things like that. I'm talking the whole, I'm not just talking race really, I'm talking everything. There's no need to get violent or attack people, or, you know, we if you have to wear the mask, okay. I know a couple people got mad at me for coming on and saying, hey, let's just wear the mask. But I just think, why the anger, you know, the anger about
that. But the thing is, Lisa, the anger is, what I'm saying, the anger might have already been there. And it's not so much about the mask per se. It's about the fact that we are infringing. People are being infringed upon their they call it constitutional rights.
I call it
comfortability. You know, we as Americans, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we're arrogant. And we're arrogant Americans at times, because it's all about our comfort levels and what our freedoms allow us to do, you know, to go and do what we want to do. And when that's infringed upon, you know, then all of a sudden we get angry. And I think the anger has been underneath, and I think just all of this has exposed it. But I do believe historically, and going back looking at things, that anger has been festering for quite a while now. And now there's been a freedom or a license given that it's okay to display that anger. You know, I'm like you. Why in the world are you going into a Walmart or a grocery store or whatever and punching out the people there trying to enforce whatever rules are being set by a mayor in a city or a governor in a state? You know, what's up with that? You know, but that anger is already there, because it's not so much about the mask. It's about how dare you tell me to wear one.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to look at. The call-in number is 347-857-4192. Press 1, and I'll make sure I identify the last four digits of your cell or telephone number, actually give you a location, and then offer your expertise. But getting back to that, I think for years, I think everything was in sort of like a comfort zone, and it was no need to kind of respond to anything because everything was in place. You know, we talked about and laughed about entitlement. We talked about entitlement, Sometimes people identify having the freedoms to do a lot of things allow you to become entitled. And then when the pandemic hit, we felt like, first of all, you're taking something away from us, which is the freedom to actually go where we want to go. If we just think about it in March, when it came in to 13 and we had the shutdown, people were angry because you're telling us what to do all the time. We've been doing it so well for since I was a child. I'm not saying myself, but that person that's speaking. And we're battling back and forth over simple things. That means that it's hard to come to some agreement where we are not able to really put our hands on what's actually in regards to what those people are feeling. My question, why would you be mad because you had to wear a mask? Why do you want to use constitutional rights, constitutional freedom, when you being responsible to save lives? And a lot of our leaders, and I'm going to say at local level, because I heard this governor, that state of Alabama, say this all the time. He said, why do we need to mandate somebody to wear a mask when they know they need to wear a mask? Because we're at a point in our life that we're not able to, you know, make those decisions because we've been so free to do things. We don't want to look at it. We've been, the market is freedom. And we're free to say what we want to do, what we want to do. We don't have a problem with suffering the consequences. Then when the consequences is a slap on the hand, then we continue to do the same thing over and over again. And that's where the rubbers begin to hit the road at this point. Everybody became equal. Everybody was, when I say equal, sitting down during COVID-19. Nobody was doing anything. So everybody was boiling. They had stuff that's pinched up inside them. They probably would have said 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but they didn't. So now they're acting out and coming out hard. And until we can sit out and have it where everybody listens to everybody, we're going to have a challenge in our hand. Yes, I say it can be fixed, but it's going to take some hard work. And we got to have every candidate, not part. We can have some people saying this person, if that person is there, they're going to do a different job. We're talking about people now. And if you got these people have this mentality that you can't tell me what to do, now that's just the way I see it. And I think that's what we're running into in regards to thinking about how we're going to be able to fix this. We have to think about a solution and work on the solution.
And well, I think that we were on the road when it first happened. This virus has been with us, you know, and I said, you know, several months ago on the show, this virus was known to the leaders of the free world in November and early December. You know, the talk was already being talked about, a virus or something coming that may hit us in January and February for sure. And it was called a hoax. It was called, you know, only five people, you know, would get it, just blah, blah, blah.
That's it.
Well, here we are now, you know, almost 150,000 people have died. Things, if you go back and look at the tapes, pull the evidence, because I pulled the evidence. Go back and look at it. When it first broke, and when somebody finally, when things started trying to hit in early March, there seemed to be initially a real concern and concerted effort until it was determined and it was shown that the virus, COVID-19, novel coronavirus, novel meaning new, new virus, nobody knows anything about, was hitting the black and brown communities, minority communities, higher than any other communities. When that was discovered or uncovered or talked about, all of a sudden, go back and check the tape, things changed. Now go back and check it. If this had hit, the representation of who was getting sick and who was dying had been equal, balanced, we might have had another response. but because we're overrepresented because of our history in health disparities in our society, and the jobs that many of our folks, you know, are take, you know, these essential workers jobs. This is where the overrepresentation came, and all of a sudden that focus, it was almost like as if, well, you know, it really doesn't affect anybody else but them. That's how I viewed it.
Until
we get this straight, you know, that all people, health, all of us, health, regardless of race, creed, color, ethnicity, or whatever, you know, that it counts for all of us. We've got to do that because our health is important to everybody, and we're essential. We count. We matter. Black lives matter. You know.
And we have to also, like we're doing now, making sure we make sure Black Lives Matter. I think that's where we also got to add it. That's why I said we got to work together on this in regards to this, because in regards to our health issues, and I know in cases in the cause of COVID-19 deaths, because a person of color didn't think they needed to go to the doctor. They didn't think they need to go. And I know as a Black man, I'm going to tell you whether y'all believe it or not, whatever y'all account. We think we can walk through where it'll be all right. We'll be all right. And sometimes things attacked us a little different. So this is a message now that we have to make sure we take care of ourselves. And we as a culture will take care of each other. And we don't have to not rely on anybody else. Like why we keep saying the white horse to come in for somebody to tell us. When you see that individuals don't really believe that since you are not part of the masses, it didn't mean a whole lot to them. So it's a wake up call to us as well. I personally believe that. I don't just think we need to overlook and put anybody. We just got to address it that way. To me, and it might not be the right way. Everybody have their different way, but we're going to have to. Every time I feel a cold or something coming on, I'm going to the doctor now. Because not because of COVID-19, it's because of the history. It's because of our cultural history. Because
right.
When you go to the doctor, they ask her, one of the things they ask her that concerned me, how did your parents have high blood pressure? Did your parent have diabetes? You have diabetic? These are the kind of things that when we're aware of it and we begin to take care of ourselves a little bit better, we'll be a lot better. And I know as a man how we are, because I know my dad, he was 80-something, almost 80-something years old before he ever went to the hospital. 80 years now, I mean, for any kind of, you know, thing. He may have went to the doctor, but 80 years old. Sometimes we push it off because we got so many things that we have to do, and we're going to have to wake up on that end too, I feel. I'm just speaking as a person of color and a male because I know we don't do it. I'm going to share our part that I can share that.
My grandfather was the same way. he would say to my grandmother, Lisa, bring me some castor oil, or bring me some this, or bring me some that. You need
exactly.
to see a doctor. And that
exactly.
was that was the old cure, but old cures in this damn time, you know, you need to see a doctor. And we do,
exactly.
you know, we have the doctor's day to doctor's day, you know, some fraternities and sororities would do that, you know, take a loved one to the doctor. You know, that was a very popular and a very effective campaign from our Divine Nine groups. And those types of things, because we do have that. We first of all, we don't trust doctors maybe as we should, you know, because, you know, people remember the Tuskegee Airmen and the Tuskegee experiments on us. There's a lot of historical
exactly.
things that we got to, you know, we're going to have to deal
yes.
with and dispel.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Tuskegee, where those men were injected with syphilis, that type of
yes,
thing, and
yes.
then it wasn't uncovered until what 1960, 1970 something. Let's go back and
yep,
look today. But I mean, this has not been long ago.
Exactly. So it's where we are now, and we need to make sure we address it how it is, so we can not be identified as high risk because we want to go to the doctor. We're afraid to go to the doctor. It, you know, it's just like mental health. It's a taboo. It's a stigma in our community when we need to. It's too many things happening that are behavior disorders. And you know, Lisa, as well as you, Scarlett, can address that. Because I'm not an expert, but I just know something. When you say a child has got a behavior, just behavior problem, but when it becomes a disorder, it has to be addressed. And we're not addressing it, and we need to make sure we address it. And that's what we're talking about. Call in number 847-857-4192. Press 1.
I was
make
just
sure you identify
one last comment
yourself
to what you just said. Because amen to what
and
you said.
We'll make sure
we
to
also
get
got to make sure
on,
we
got it. Go ahead on.
We got to make sure that we expect and not request. You know, we have to do the good trouble now. We got to, you know, to demand from our elected leaders that each community have good water, they have access to good food, healthy food, vegetables, fruits, and things of that nature, that we have billboards and things advertising liquor and all those things that are adverse to our health removed from our communities. We got to ensure that we live in, that we have communities that still don't have smokestacks polluting the air. So that's why climate change and environmental change is so important. And those types of things, we got to, you know,
exactly.
We got to demand it. You know, we're at the point now, you know, of no more requesting and asking nicely and all these kinds of things. You got to stand up for your communities and bring things in that are healthy and viable like any other community in this country that you want for one child, one family needs to have the same thing in their neighborhoods too. And that's clean air and water and healthy food to eat.
Exactly.
That's also what has contributed to our health disparities.
Exactly. So we have to demand this. And that's why I said now we got to march for change. We know that. We're not worried about what we need. See, that's what I'm saying. The solution is to address things like what Scarlett just shared. You know, Flint, Michigan and the water situation there. That didn't happen not only in Flint, Michigan, and it happened down in Sumter County with the water situation being contaminated. We have to demand that we have good, you know, the system got to be good system and demand it and stop allowing people to put whatever they want into our neighborhoods. We got to take the alcohol out, you know, because it's leading to some things. High crime rate is nothing that we need to be boasting and bragging about. When we've seen people, you know, watching the news, 3 people get shot last night, 4 people get shot, 17 in Chicago, and they're out of control, and it's in our community. We have to begin to do that. We have to demand that out of each other and hold us accountable. We don't need nobody to come in and hold us accountable. We need to hold us accountable. And these things we have to have. If you elect officials from your local level, from your district level, from your state level, from your county level, hold them accountable. I was talking earlier about why hadn't anybody in this district or in Montgomery said anything about asking the constituents, we want to stay alive, we want to be responsible, put a mask on. No one politician, and he was on our show, and that was C.C. Calhoun, Councilman C.C. Calhoun, wrote up a proposal to get the mask in the city of Montgomery. Nobody else said anything else. I don't. Everybody said, well, the mayor said, everybody, all of those 9 councilmen must say something if we wanted to change. And that's how it had to be. That's what, block by block?
Block by block.
From ground level? That's
right.
What we got to ask for. And quit, don't expect nobody from a federal level to do it. We can do it. We got to demand that our politicians who come to us and get on our shows and do things and talk about what they're going to do, let's hold you accountable. I applaud Councilman C.C. Calhoun. He stepped up to the plate when the other 8 wouldn't really say anything. because we heard word about hurting business. Life should be the number one priority. That's what we should be all about.
And then also demand better education for your children, the better facilities. You know,
yes,
why
yes.
in the world are children still learning and being taught in 100-plus year classrooms with paint, wires falling all over the place? And that's in essence quite a few places in this country. They can't get broadband services in order to do online learning, distance learning, virtual learning. They can't, because they don't have access. You know, we've got, you know, we're good. We are just out here talking about demanding what I need. You know,
we got to get
troubled, and we got to start standing up and rising up and just saying enough is enough. This is what
I'm glad
we
you're saying
are
that,
asking
Charlotte,
for.
Because we're going to move to education, the hidden cause of America's broken education system, how we can fix it. Scarlett just mentioned some things in regards to education. Our school systems has went from a time of segregation to integration to post-integration. Now we back to a sense of what we call neighborhood school, which is back to segregation. Some of those buildings, I graduated from a high school that was built in, guess imagine, it's 104 years old. And it's still in existence, students still going to that school, still attending, look just like it looked then. And my point is, how can you sit up here and focus on, we've had petitions about changing the name of a school instead of let's get our children out of this building. That's my fight with the people that want to make a petition to change the name of, because the name might be of somebody who was a Confederate soldier or general or president. I'm focusing on getting those students into a building. In a building that's suitable for them.
Taking the Confederate statues down from all over the country, which they do need to be put into a museum. But I would like to see us use our energy on getting statues to deal with some of this stuff that we're facing in the communities and make them laws and make them mandates. And then instead of removing statues in your town, tell them to remove your kids out of those crumbling schools.
There you go. Nah. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about education. How can we fix it? And that's why, you know, when the alumni of this school, which I'm alumni, sent out, I said, I'm worried about no name. I can care less. I'm worried about you building a new high school over there so those children of 2020 don't have to walk in a cold building. Build a new middle school who've been there for 75 years and got windows all over the place, windows cracked. And the system, they cold kids sitting up with coats on 2019, 2020. That's what we're talking about. That's what we want them to do. We want them to make changes like that. That's what we want. We want changes to be made in schools. Now, some people may, you know, I know in Florida, a lot of schools down there are practically, you know, I was amazed when I was in South Florida, and Lisa can attest to it because she's there. I was amazed at so many nice, beautiful schools. modern, they don't have all that glass, but we still have buildings. But we have a call on the line. I'm going to give them a chance to offer their expertise or their thoughts on what we're talking about dealing with the education system. Previously, we talked about COVID-19 as well as how can we fix America. The caller with the last four digits, 4644, you are now live. Can you give your location or name and then offer your comment?
Well, I'm calling from the Midwest. My name's Pianchi. But what stopped me is what that lady said. Holy cow. She's right on point. You're taking down statues, which is a part of American history. No matter what happened, it happened. and that's why we're here today, rather than fixing these decrepit school systems, and I'm talking about blacks. I'm talking about blacks. I know everybody else have their problems. Let's talk about blacks. The education system has been totally, totally ridiculous as it applies to African-American children.
Amen.
It has.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at the, you know, and a lot of it has to do with the society itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. you we know the story of Kobe Bryant. When he practiced, he took 800 free throw shots. But
mm-hmm.
you got your children out there trying to be a Kobe Bryant, taking 100, 150, 200 free throw shots when they should be at home doing 100 math problems in order to increase their skills.
All right,
why come that's not? Why would you pass by these fields at 8 o'clock at night? These coaches have got these young kids out there
mm-hmm.
practicing football drills when they should be at home doing their math and schoolwork. Why is that? You're trying to live your displaced life through these children. And that's totally ridiculous. And parents let this mess go on. You know how many kids were sacrificed to produce one LeBron James?
Amen.
One Kobe? Think about that. And see, if they just, wait a minute, here's the key thing. Now, there's nothing wrong with sports, but you got to have a balance. My siblings, they had academics, and they had particular sports. You know, there are sports out there that offer scholarships that blacks don't even go out for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what sense does that make? I mean, think about it, sir. Baltimore had 3,800 high schoolers that took their math exam. Only 14 mm-hmm. passed with a proficiency. 14. Don't hear nothing about it. Don't hear nothing about it. And look at the shootings in Chicago. And y'all hope you're sitting down. I hope you're sitting down. Since Memorial Day weekend through this past weekend, which was 64 days, they don't have 1,047 kids shot and 180 murdered.
Yep.
You want me to tell you that again? 1,047.
Your chances
of getting shot in Chicago is greater than you winning the Illinois lottery, and even if you won that, they can't pay you.
Can't pay you.
We're on a cliffhanger.
Thank you so much, Paula. Just hang on the line. We'll get you back.
I'm happy I could contribute.
All right.
He's telling the truth. Like I said, you're talking about the Florida schools here in my part of the woods in Greenville. All of our schools are brand new or were completely renovated and refurbished. I was in a brand new school, $10.4 million school, and it makes a difference when you take kids out of crumbling, disruptive and just decimated environments and place them in schools and environments that are green schools with green spaces and lots of glass to let sunlight come in, this type of thing, it made a difference. And he's telling the truth, it made a difference. And we fought for the referendums here. Because everybody trying to put a referendum on the floor years ago, and you knew your taxes were going to go up. But my God, taxes going up $5 and $10, and you tell me we can't have better schools for $5 or $10 on your taxes? And there was a fight that we fought for I don't know how many years until eventually it happened, and we had a new superintendent that came in and made it happen. So it can be when you demand it and you say we're tired of our kids being in schools that look like this. Unfortunately, it's not in the other part of the state. You know, I know you've heard about the I-95 corridor. That school that I was talking about is a high school that's over 100-some years old, and they've done documentaries on it. paint off the walls, loose wires everywhere. It's wonder someone hadn't been electrocuted yet, and just awful conditions, conducive, that's not conducive to children learning. And then on top of that, after you get the building, then you got to get the right people inside the school. And if no one has, we've talked about this on the show too, the CARES Act. You talked about this last week. In this state, they took we received $32 million went to private schools. You know how much was he was given to the public schools? $12
million.
$12 million went to private schools because that's what this new administration is pushing, private schools and charter, you know.
Private and charter. Yeah.
But the public schools only got $12 million, and then you got a whole part of the state where children do not have broadband services, can't access access distant learning or virtual learning or anything because they can't have access with the Wi-Fi or anything else. So how are they going to learn if they got to stay at home? And then we got people of privilege and entitlement out there protesting because parents do not want to send their children back to school, but you're demanding that the schools be open for your children to come because you don't, you know, consider high-paid babysitters.
Exactly. That's what
it
is.
And we're not that. We're professional people.
That's real talk. That's real talk you're hearing there, people. That's real talk. I'm a cheerleader because I spent a lifetime in all phases of education.
Me too.
I went through all the things you're talking about.
Thank
you're talking about from segregation to integration, I call it post-integration, and back to segregation called neighborhood school. Now we're in a new phase called charter and private schools. Whether
right,
we believe it or not.
And
I want to add to this right there what she was saying about those money going toward the private schools and the charter school. Just consider something that we call ourselves doing to begin to separate ourselves from each other. And I'm going to say it, people don't like to hear it. We have a sense of separation in our own culture. When we make the money, we got to have and have not. You don't want to hear it, but it is for real. We want to separate ourselves because, for example, I'll take where I am. I fought against this, magnet schools. Magnet schools are nothing but a form of a charter school or private school for certain children. When you start separating it and accepting that and believing that's the way to do things because we want the best education for our children instead of being in that traditional setting, we run into a problem. Now, we're complaining, and we're not complaining, but we're trying to address you, let you know that's where the money gone. Let's check ourselves. It's time to check ourselves because I know we fought hard in Montgomery to have charter school because you want to stop white flight.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we wanted to stop.
That's really what
and
it was all about.
And all of the positions that filled in these public schools, meaning these magnet schools, the majority of them either are Caucasian or are they Asian, very few Hispanic, very few Black. And we all right. They only have 500 slots. Now, this is the kind of thing we allowed to happen because we could get our child in. See, we were more concerned about getting one child in there, again, getting individually, and we weren't concerned about the ones that we left over here at our traditional school.
Well,
now we see
further.
What's really being coming, what's coming out now. What's coming out now is, in actuality, is that the people you have in office as Secretary of Education, they say, okay, you've been doing it all the time. Now we're going to take the money and put it over there. So we have to be for real, and we have to address what I said. We're going to march for change. We know that. Let's march down there and say,
well,
just like
I opened a magnet school. I was an assistant principal, and I opened a magnet school. I went through that same era like you did, and it was a science magnet, science math and science magnet. Let me tell you, principal said, Ms. Black, I want you to take these parents on a tour to see the school, the magnet. One of the first questions I was asked by someone that did not look like me is, are these kids going to still be here when the school opened next year as a magnet? I said, well, this is their neighborhood school. You know, where are they going to go? You know.
Yep.
And as a result of that, that's not what they had in mind for a magnet. The magnet was supposed to be all the kids in the neighborhood supposed to be moved somewhere else so that these
yep.
kids come in for the magnet. And the kids
wow.
in the neighborhood look like me.
Exactly. Exactly. I see it try to happen here in Montgomery. The call-in number is 347-857-4192. Press 1. I'll make sure I get you on. You're like our brother from the Midwest who was on sharing his thoughts on that. I'm gonna pop him back live in one more minute. But
yeah, I
got
to say amen to him
because
he was right on.
You have any thoughts on in regards to that, Lisa, in regards to what we're talking about?
I'm just taking it all in. I'm thinking what's gone on down here, and because we had a massive school shooting, you know, a little over 2 years ago.
Yes.
So a lot of our funds have gone into, I have to say, you know, they're putting it into school safety. So I think, you know, there were some changes, you know, monies had to be allocated for something different. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they did
yeah,
need to make
yeah.
changes with regards to that because of the trauma that was down here. And so just because I'm in two different school districts. So, I mean, some of the schools in the area where I live, they've been fixing up. They're tearing some of them down and they are rebuilding. There's a school about 5 minutes from me and they tore the school down. There were all these plans to fix schools in different areas. Now, I don't know where it stands now, but they were going to take measures for that. Is there an increase in charter? Yes. Magnet? Yes. I don't know how well they're doing. I don't know how well that they are doing down here. You know, they're popping up all over. My guess is this year those schools will be a bit more crowded because I guess they're smaller, you know. But
yeah.
I think right now the biggest concern is I don't know if there's funds to make changes that they need to make in general as a whole. I don't know with sanitation. You've got two different things going on, the virtual. Is there enough funding to get that into effect? And you're right, there's kids that don't have Wi-Fi. They don't have access to computers. Some families still rely on the libraries, you know. They go to the libraries to print things out and do things. So I think it's a whole slew of problems that, you know, we do need to put more money into education and, you know, supporting the teachers. This is a very, I know down here, I know, because I know different teachers, it's very stressful for them. You know,
but
now we have
your state has filed a lawsuit against.
I know.
Your governor
filed it,
filed it, and I don't blame them because.
No, I don't blame them either.
Mm-mm, you're not ready to open.
And it's the scary thing to me about it, and I do want the kids in school more than anything, I don't want them there if it's not safe and a concern, and I've talked to a couple teachers about it. What, you know, here's an issue, guys. Somebody coughs in class, and then another kid goes home, oh, mommy, you know, Mikey was coughing in class.
Yeah.
And you're going to get that parent calling up the school
yeah.
and screaming, and because they're reacting on emotion, which I understand, but what do you do? What do they do if somebody, like, what if a kid vomits in class, you know, maybe the food didn't agree with them,
yeah.
and they're going to go home and tell their peer, or anxiety. I have kids that get sick from anxiety. What's going to be the plans for the teachers? Do they have to have everyone 6 feet apart? How do they line them up? Do they do the temp check? You know, this is a whole different, and I think, I mean, in reality, it's a liability, I think. I think it's a liability right now.
Well, they're trying to make them sign waivers to waive the liability, which I think is wrong.
We can't do that. No, we can't do that. We have to protect everybody.
If they're being forced to go back to work and go back to school, and I think they ought to be allowed to sue. I really do, because...
Well, and the parents, the teachers are worried about the kids, and, you know, and I get it. You know, everybody's upset right now, and I think what they need to do is my opinion, for what it's worth, keep this virtual. We need to monitor this virus. Let's make changes that we need to make. Figure out, I've said this, let's get the bathrooms fixed up. Let's make it where the doors are automatic. They have to push a button in order to let people in. Like, say, you know, I'm thinking all these simple little things. Start working on it now. So if the kids go back January or even next year, let's find cost-effective ways to make this work, because I'm sorry to say, viruses don't just go away, you know, and this virus is going to be here like the rest of them. We want to lower the numbers. We want to lower the fatalities. We want to treat the symptoms, and we want to make sure everybody's safe and feels comfortable. And right now, I can clearly tell you the majority of people I talk to are not, for different reasons. There's some people, they're comfortable, that's fine, but there's other people that are not. And, you know, I just feel for the, you know, I love children, and I want what's best for these kids. And, you know, my other fear is the longer they stay out of school, harder time we're going to have getting some of these kids back in. And my other concern is, which I don't know if anyone's thought about this, and I work with kids on the spectrum. They don't know how to, that's dealing with a total, Scarlett, you know, it's dealing with a total different type of child, and they need, you know, what is it? What's the ratio per student? I forget, with teachers in a classroom, but they're not thinking about those kids.
Right.
Or,
in most,
you know,
in some states, you can go up to like 40, 45 kids in a classroom to save money.
You can't do that anymore.
Yeah, but that's a nightmare. In my school, I always try to keep the what you're talking about, your good point of student teacher-student ratio, I tried to keep it no more than about 18 in the classroom, and that was really stretching the budget in order to make that happen. And even with that, when you're trying to do direct teaching and not putting kids on a laptop all day and looking at videos and movies to learn, which is also miseducation of children, that we haven't talked about. You know, you can still have beautiful schools. We have 104, you know, beautiful schools because everything was brand new or rebuilt. But inside the school, are the kids getting what they really need to get? That's the reason why, you know, you have so many charter and magnet schools, because that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Thank you.
You know, to separate and resegregate the public schools. And when here, this governor, $32 million going to private schools of 5,000 kids total in the state, just about, over all these kids. We have 60,000 students just in this school district, which is the largest in the state. $12 million is all the public schools got. Well, they're now suing this governor here for that, on how that money was allocated and used. And so, you know, these states that we're in, and we're in the southern states, what's called the red states, we're having a time. And even in the urban areas, we're having a time. And we're just going to have to start demanding some things and just saying, enough, y'all, enough. We're not going to tolerate this anymore. And we want the best education for our children, because if we don't get this education system, these systems straight, we're not going to really have a public school education. And what bothers me more than anything is the fact that we have trained, public schools have trained leaders of this country, majority. Everybody's sitting in Congress or in your state and local areas weren't born with silver spoons in their mouths and went to private schools or things like that. They went to public schools. There was a public school teacher in front of them who taught them, and they loved and they graduated and they went on and made, you know, made great lives for themselves and their families. Public school education did that. Not private school. Public school education. We trained the masses. We trained the future. That's what it's all about. And yet still, we, you know, I have to defend the teachers and the administrators. I've been there. You know, 42 years. I was in it, thick in it. Haven't been that long out of it. And the fact that you're gonna send people back into these, this virus, no PPE protection, no plans really, because somebody told you you need to open schools. But what's the plan? We talked about this 3 weeks ago. What's the plan to protect the students? But you gotta protect those adults in that building too, because if they go down, you're not gonna have a school anyway. We're already in a national teacher shortage, you know, and
yes,
under-insulated, it's become worse. You can't get anybody going to education much anymore because we don't value it, and what you don't value, people don't think it's worth a value. If we start placing value on it, then maybe we can start getting people to start valuing it, because it's a time-honored profession. And again, we have trained the masses. Anybody you want name you want to bring up who's been president, senator, governor, whatever case may be, most of them, the majority, started and finished a public school, got public education.
Exactly. And that's what we're talking about. We got we own education, and we see what's going on. We have to address it from our own personal experience. And you have some as well. Call in. Let us know, 347-857-4192. Press 1, and I'll make sure I get you on. And so you can share your thoughts. I identify the last 4 digits of your cell and telephone number if that's what you're using. And we'll make sure. I have a lot of people on Facebook commenting and I want to share one comment with the team, and I think Lisa may be able to see it and may not. It says that, Doc, you're going to have 45 on Twitter about your show. But they said, but I got your back. So I would laugh there because the words don't get out. It's going to be out. But the thing about it, I'm all right with the word being out, because anybody else can listen to it, but I want everybody that's on the ground level to listen to what we're saying. We cannot allow somebody else to be hearing what we say and reacting. We have to react to it. We set ourselves in situations, and as Scarlett said, that, you know, she had 40-some years, and I'm still working right now, but I'm working at the college level preparing teachers. So I know what the struggle is again. There's a struggle that we have talked about that we encounter when the teaching profession has been misvalued. It hadn't been treated as any other professional level person. But as long as we continue to allow that to happen, we're going to continue to have some challenges. That's why I said, let's march for change. These are the kind of changes we want to happen. We want to see that individuals' funding put into the schools and not have to sue, like in the state of Alabama, one of our legislators who was a employee at Alabama State University had to sue for equality, equity, making sure we got the black school got the same amount of money as the Caucasian schools. This is true facts, and I watched this gentleman do this and fight to make sure that was not where we was getting 8% when everybody else was getting 10%. This happened during segregation, and people carried on this same thing, and that's why some of our schools in traditional schools didn't get a chance to grow like they needed to grow, because all the things were taken. It's stories we can tell, but we don't have enough time on this show to tell you the stories about where some of our schools and where we are now, but we don't have to accept that. We have opportunities to make things better, but we have to be willing to make better. If we're not a great parent, ask to be a better parent. Somebody can train you to be a parent.
you can teach your child just like anybody else can teach it. I know everybody's talking about, what are we going to do with them? Well, first of all, you may not know much of that math and that algebra, but if you dare as a parent to make sure they do that math and do what they're supposed to do, that's where your job come in. Sometimes the role has to be understood. And as long as we don't understand that, and the children come on and tell you, and I had my eyes, she'd come, I said, you have the homework? No, Dad, I don't know. Let me see. As a parent, you got to do that because you're the adult. You ain't your child's friend. Don't try to be your child's friend.
Well, they got plenty of friends.
You can't
be
their friend.
They
got
the roles got to be different.
They don't want you as a friend. They want somebody as an adult. I always tell teachers when I talk to my interns, I tell them when they get ready to go into the field, you're not their friend. You're an adult. I don't care if you're 21, 22. You're an adult. And you are to carry that capacity and act like that. Because they got enough friends.
I think that's why the lines have been so crossed, because we think that you can't go back and relive your teenage years through current teenagers of today. You got to be the adult in the room. And teachers have got to be the adult in the room. They don't need another girlfriend or this, that, and the other. Some of us got lines crossed, and the bad press from lines being crossed also affects the perception of our schools.
Exactly. That creates the perception when you start stepping across the line.
When
those students come home
to
the, when they're not and I don't ever want individuals to tell me about a test. I always have a problem. They always get, you know, I'm going to say what I want about it. Tests don't determine whether a student can be successful.
Commit,
I ain't never seen one. Because some people
test
well, some don't test well. And sometimes it's just at that point. They can sit up and have the same information. Sometimes have deficiency, and we want identifying each student as an individual and teaching them for where they are. Once you find out where they are, get them where they need to be. They may not get all the way to where they need to be, but you have to do that. You can't teach everybody as a group, and we have to replace that. And I share that with my intern as well. Don't you go in there thinking everybody at the same level, because they may not be just because they're in the same grade. But this is the perception that our education system has and our young people have as well. But that's not true. Students will adjust when they need to adjust. And that's proven in many opportunities. Now, we're down to about 8-9 minutes, and what we want to do now is take this. It's been a great show, but we still got some other parts that we're going to. So we're coming back next week. We're coming back next week, and we're going to touch bases on some of these things we didn't touch on, because I really want to talk about the lawsuit between the NAACP and Bessie DeVoe. I want to talk about that.
That's a great one for next week. It's going to take more time
than 5 minutes. So I want to really talk about that, because it means something. You know, that's what I'm talking about. That's how we make change. March for Change, filing a lawsuit challenging that individual.
And if you're afraid to speak up, if you're afraid to express, if you're afraid to demand, then you had the game from the very beginning.
Exactly.
You had the game from the very beginning. There's one thing about it. First Amendment rights applies to all of us. The right and the left and the middle. And the name of this show is called Talking Real to You.
Real talk.
Can't stand the real talk, hey, because it's going to be said here. And hopefully that people will get spurred up to get fired up. And like the lady said, fired up and ready to go. You know, we just got to stand up and just say enough. Enough.
Exactly. And we're at the end of the show. Lisa, y'all did an outstanding job. Appreciate you. Scarlett did awesome tonight. Even our caller added some very important information. We're down about four or five minutes. And the board is full of people names. And I want to give them a shout out. I don't want to miss anybody before we get to that 9 o'clock hour. So if y'all allow me this opportunity to call out those names of those people who's watching, or who was on and he might have stepped away, but they still left their information. I want to do that on both of the devices. I have Facebook on. So then when I finish, I want you to share your last parting thoughts, and then we're going to close the show out. Okay, we have our co-host. She was on her early. Was trying to get her live, and she made sure she typed in about the iPad. So, Lisa, we make sure we give you that shout out because you were on there earlier on the Facebook, and you was working through it. Also, we have Barry Dobbs, and we thank you, Donald Van Horn. Thank you. We also have is this Sherry Bullard MacMillan, one of those students from down long time ago. And I say a lot of these students that they're fully grown now, fully grown now, that I coached or even taught at this school called McKenzie, and she's one of them. We have Karen Sally Rogers, and we have her as well. That's Sally Rogers, and she's joining us as well. She has High Coach Smith. That's why I know they from back in the days with me. The Queen, Mr. Ministress Lewis, a host of the Minister Shannon Show. Latay Pickett, she was all as a guest when we first started this show 3 years ago. Also, my frat brother, our frat brother, Terrence Babyhead Gibson out of Miami Garden, he's joining us as well. Denise Stephanie out of Berkeley, California. Thank you, Denise, and she shared a lot of thoughts in here. I didn't get a chance to read anything, you know, but she did share some thoughts about California and the reopening of school and one of the staff members contracting COVID, and now the school was shut down again. Minister Shannon, she shared some thoughts in regards to this. She the one said about 45 checking the show out on Twitter, and I'm going to have a problem. She said she got our backs, so we good. Marvin Lala Smith, who has a gospel show that he has on at 12 o'clock on his page. That's Marvin Smith. Check him out. Lala, thank you so much for joining us. Also, we have, I'm scrolling down. There's a lot of thoughts by Denise as well as Queen Ministries Lewis. They had a lot of thoughts in here, and I appreciate them talking about disagreeing a little bit in regard to magnet schools because, you know, we put our kids in these schools, and these schools are not a benefit sometimes to our children. It's more for a parent. This is a situation with a parent. Also, we have Kim Sellers Bates. Thank you, Kim Sellers, graduate of Alabama and Alabama State University. Thank you so much, Kim, for joining us on a regular basis. We also have, still strolling down, we have Bobby Diggs, a member of Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity. I mentioned him early, but he has some thoughts he added into it as well as talking about NAACP. So we want to get in my biological sister, Yvette Smith, out of Georgia. She's joined us. Cecilia Sunshine Jackson, thank you so much. We also are strolling down. We got everybody in here. We have Lakeisha Tisdale. Thank you, Lakeisha, so much. What Titania Sally Owens, thank you. She worked with me down there in McKenzie, and she made a request a week or so ago to be a member, and I thank her. She shared with some of family and friends to join us from McKenzie. Thank you so much. God is so good, I'm telling you. Then we also have some people repeating. I'm strolling. Give me a chance to stroll here, people. You see Dana Bowser from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I mentioned her earlier. She's the mamacita in regards to Zumba. And she has some shirts as well as some masks that she has for sale. And I purchased a shirt as well as a mask. So
I'm interested in a mask.
I want to make sure I
have a real interest in a mask.
Yeah, okay, for sure. I'll make sure of that. We'll get the information and get you a mask. And it's just an opportunity to kind of be supportive of each other. And that's what this vessel is all about. That was a list of individuals. Thank you so much for joining us. I see Lisa may have dropped to call right here, but we're going to kind of close it out tonight. Scarlett will allow you to close it out with the parting words, and then we'll do it. I'll do what I normally do as we close it out.
Well, everyone knows the name of the show. You know, Real Talk, talking real to you. And this is what we do week after week. And we thank you so much for joining us and for listening to us week after week. hopefully that we've said something that may get us to think, and I know we're thinking because you all are with us. We got the weekend, and we know that you all are on it, and maybe encourage others to also be on it and be observant, be alert, and start expecting things to change. If you want things to change, you have to expect it, and you have to work towards those expectations of making change happen. It's not going to happen in a vacuum. We have to get out there. We have to be vocal. We have to be alert, and we have to be vigilant, and we have to be involved. And I think involved is the key word, because we have to be involved means that you care. And even though whether you have kids in school, whether you have kids grown or whatever case may be, we're all our brothers and sisters keepers. And how it goes in our communities with water, clean air, environment, good food, those things should be given rights for all of us, everyone in our society. So I hope and pray that we will move towards that direction. That's what this show is all about. Again, we go block by block, person by person, group by group, whatever the case may be, to get the job done and to make a difference in the lives of others. So thank you again for joining us tonight, and a special shout out to all members of the Divine Nine, and personally my sisters and brothers and Zeta and Phi Beta Sigma. God bless each of you, and let's continue to do the hard work we know that we have to do.
President and Mrs. Obama, President Clinton, President Carter, I want to thank Bernice King, the King family, and the National Park Service for inviting me here to speak today. When I look out over this diverse crowd and survey the guests on this platform, it seemed to realize what Otis Redding sang about and what Martin Luther King Jr. preached about. This moment in our history has been a long time coming, but a change has come. We are standing here in the shadow of Abraham Lincoln, 150 years after he issued the Emancipation Proclamation, and only 50 years after the historic March on Washington for jobs and freedom. We have come a great distance in this country in the 50 years, but we still have a great distance to go before we fulfill the dream of Martin Luther King Jr. Sometimes I hear people saying, nothing has changed, but for someone to grow up the way I grew up in the cotton fields of Alabama, to not be serving in the United States Congress, makes me want to tell them, come and walk in my shoes. Come walk in the shoes of those who were attacked by police dogs, fire hoses, and nightsticks, arrested and taken to jail. I first came to Washington in the same year that President Barack Obama was born to participate in the Freedom Ride. In 1961, black and white people could not be seated together on a Greyhound bus. So we decided to take an integrated fashion ride from here to New Orleans. But we never made it there. Over 400 of us were arrested and jailed in Mississippi during the Freedom Ride. A bus was set on fire in Anniston, Alabama. We were beaten and arrested and jailed, but we helped bring an end to segregation and public transportation. I came back here again in June of 1963 with the Big Six as the new chairman of the Student Nonviolent